Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 566, The Sting.
Oh, great.
Two.
Oh, no!
Oh, goodness. Well, before we get too deep off into the weeds, let's go around the virtual table. Everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. So nice of Joe to join us.
Yeah,
at the outset.
You know, it's so much easier when I can just walk in and sit in front of a mic, but when I had to bring up Skype, they're like, you need to install these 17 updates. It's like, well, cool.
Good times. So before we get into the movie, quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, which is called the League of Show Sharers. And, of course, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and the pride in knowing you helped out a little bit
in these trying times.
This is probably the most important thing you can give your money to.
That's right.
So I'd say so.
So anyway, The Sting 2. Wow. I'm always fascinated by movies like this, which is why I lobby for them. But like, just the idea that, like, I mean, first off, When this movie came out, 10 years to wait to make a sequel was just a huge gap. Like,
yeah, sure,
I mean,
sure.
Because if you look at, like, Godfather 1 and 2, there were, like, 2 years in between those movies. They, like boom, churned that second one out really quickly.
And that's weird because, like, even back then, sequels weren't a thing.
So the first major motion picture to be released with a number in the title was The Godfather 2.
Well, there we go.
So you would see franchises, or you would, you know, I won't say it was the first sequel. I mean, there, you know, Abbott Costello had Buck Privates. You had Buck Privates Come Home. You had movies like, you know, that had a million different things, you know, in their franchise. I mean, there was like 35 Blondie movies and all sorts of, like, Mickey Rooney movies where he played Andy Hardy. You know,
I thought you were going to say Andy Richter. I was like, he's never
but,
been in a sequel.
So, I mean, I won't go as far as to say that there were never sequels, but, like, the first time you really started seeing Hollywood, like, well, that worked, let's make another one, was Godfather 2.
And what year was Godfather 2?
I believe it's 74. I think Godfather 1 came out in 72 and Godfather 2 came out in 74, I think.
So I was just thinking, like, Halloween was 78.
Yes. 72,
and then Halloween 2 is 81. And then Superman was 78. And then Superman 2 was 81. So, like, I guess that tracks. That makes sense. And then,
well, Superman was the same movie, right? They just cut it in two?
No, because you had Zod and all that stuff. right? So like you had,
but a
Superman
lot of that
one,
but a lot of yes, that footage from yes, two had been shot for one. Like they,
yes, the whole Zod, Ursa, and Non storyline was part, like that's in one, like that whole, it's all set up in one. And then they switched, they flipped it over to two. And I gotta tell you, there's that Donner cut that is released, like that you can go buy the original Richard Donner cut, and it's not good.
Yeah.
Like it's a different movie. Yeah. There's bits and pieces from one that went to two and two that went to one. There's a good scene where Lois is like drawing on the picture, like she's, you know, the first picture of Superman in the
front
page of the Daily Planet, yeah, where she's drawing a hat and glasses on him, yeah, and she's like, "This is ridiculous." And it's,
yeah,
like,
right?
You know,
that's a good moment.
But yeah, it's just, and that was an outtake. Like that's a deleted scene. But yeah, like they made the right call in making those two different movies.
Well, and I guess the thing was is that, like, you know, this is this came out in 83, and so it's like right as home video starting to really hit critical mass.
Sure.
And but like it's not like The Sting was a movie that it was a huge hit. Like it made $159 million in, like, when did it come out? Like 72, 73. So
yeah, and it's in talks for, I mean, it's in the contention for one of the greatest films ever made.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the perfect Hollywood movie, right? Like, yeah, it's, I mean, it's got great set pieces and it's funny and it's serious and
two massive leads, massively charismatic,
massive
leads,
two huge movie stars with great, yeah, chemistry. Like, I mean, just everything about the music is great. Everything about that movie works. I mean, it, like I said, it is pure Hollywood perfection,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And
yep.
But like, it's not like it's a movie that cried out for a sequel. It's not like it's a movie that, especially in an age when it wasn't a given that you'd make a sequel to a movie, right? And so,
was this always a sequel to The Sting?
So
or was this something that they changed?
So here's the really thing, the really weird thing. It's written by the same guy.
Oh, okay.
The same guy who wrote The Sting wrote The Sting too. Like it's not, he got credit for characters. He wrote the movie. And the story goes that for The Sting, he sent the script in and it was in the slush pile. And
interesting.
And somebody found it in the slush pile and like basically wrote a note, like whose job was to read the scripts and see if there was any hidden gems. And he found it and he kicked it up the food chain with a note that said, "This is the great American screenplay. If you make this with a big name director and big name movie stars, this will sweep the Academy Awards." And the person who pulled that script out of the slush pile,
yeah,
Rob Cohen, the director of the Fast and Furious.
No,
yes.
What?
So, yeah, I know, like that, and that
he was just reading scripts. Back
that
then?
Was where he was at in his career. Was he was just starting out, and he was the like the guy to go through and read all, yeah, these BS unsolicited scripts and see if there you find anything good. And he found The Sting and was like, "This is brilliant, and you need to make it."
Wow.
And so. So David S. Ward, the guy who wrote it, like wrote a bunch of other movies. The two that you would be most familiar with is he wrote Major League.
Oh, so good.
And I got to think that like maybe there were multiple scripts in production and somebody like took his and like had to give him a credit on it because he has a credit on Sleepless in Seattle, which obviously is a Nora Ephron movie, right?
Sure.
And so, but he has a screenwriting credit on Sleepless in Seattle. So I don't know if he was working on a similar movie and they kind of had to merge scripts and he was owed a credit. I have no idea. But the other thing that you would most likely know him for is Major League, which is so weird, right? That like,
that's a very different movie.
Those two seem very different. And so when you said the characters, the other thing that makes this movie so weird is that it's called The Sting 2 and it's not technically a sequel. Even though it's different actors, none of these characters technically appear in The Sting.
Well, wait.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Isn't Mac Davis
The main characters are the same people.
Yeah, that's what they want you to think.
Isn't Mag-
so
oh, he, they're not. So I just here, looked at, you're right.
Right.
They're
so,
the same last name.
Right. So in the first movie, Robert Redford played John Kelly Hooker.
Uh-huh.
Mac Davis plays Jake Hooker. And
then, no yeah. way.
And then Paul Newman
I thought,
played
him. I was with Kevin because I had to, I just looked it up,
yeah.
and you're absolutely
and
right.
I just presumed they were the same characters
right.
on a different adventure.
And Paul Newman played Henry Shaw Gondorf, but in this one, he's called Fargo Gondorf. And then yeah. they say that, like, and then Lonnegan is, like, out to get him, and Lonnegan's the guy that they sting in the first one. And in this time out, he's played by
That's Robert Shaw.
It's Robert Shaw in the first one. It's Oliver Reed in this one. Oliver Reed turned down the role in the sting. So I'm sure when they came back around, he's like, "Well, I'm not making that mistake twice." And
instead,
he made a whole new mistake. but he like references in the movie about how like he's mad at these guys and they got him. 6 years
well, yeah,
ago
they're the same
and that
it's
he's out for vengeance but the thing is that like also the sting takes place in 1936 this takes place in 1940 so it's only been 4 years not six so like
right.
they do all these things that like if you're not paying super attention to what happened in the sting like if you're not like the like just the a diehard fan of the sting where you have it memorized you're going to hear the name Gondorf you're going to hear the name Hooker you're going to hear Lon again and that he's out and he's mad at them because they got and like it's all going to connect back to the sting but when you actually map it out none of it maps back to the first
this
movie.
Is the it's the Kmart version it's the venture
you know
version
what this,
of the sting
you know what this plays like to me it plays almost like they were making a made for TV version of it like it was like you know how they would do
oh,
like
sure.
they would make like a TV adaptation to make it a weekly series like
The Shining or Salem's Lot or yes
or like you know like there was a TV show based on Paper Moon right
oh that's weird
yeah and it starred Jodie Foster as you know and and it lasted like six episodes but you would get this a lot back then they would if a movie was a big hit they'd adapt it into a TV show and see if they could get a little more traction out of it right so I mean the probably the most famous example is MASH but even like
yeah but that worked
totally but it also worked by being completely different than the film even though the film is great it's a totally you know it, you need to do something different on TV to get people back every week than you do with a film but you would see that a lot like right like there was a made for TV version sitcom version of Animal House right the TV
Clerks there's a TV
right.
there's a TV version of Clerks
the show Alice is based on the Martin Scorsese film Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore right and so,
oh really
yeah and so oh. So like you would see that a lot but and that's not what this was intended for but like it feels like that like oh we'll change the name slightly so we don't really have to honor what happened before but it feels like it like it's all so weirdly bad
this
and
is,
fascinating.
This is yeah this is completely bizarre. I did not pick up on that because I just presumed since they had the same last names and I'm like okay
yeah.
no one in the cast returned they had to get different people it was right. 10 years later clearly they weren't interested and then yeah because the bad guy references being bilked out of $500,000 that's exactly what happens in the sting
totally
so I don't
but
understand
but then he also says though
like,
that they got him the same way, but they didn't get him with a boxing thing. They got him with a horse racing thing.
It was a whole card game, right?
Well, they get him in a card game, and then that pisses him off. But then at the end, they get him with a horse racing scam.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, the whole operation they put together is amazing. What they do to like cast 30 or 40 people, and it's just really neat. Whereas like it wasn't like, hey, just go in this ring and take a dive. Like
yeah, right.
the scams are completely different levels of scams. Like
yes.
these guys.
This
are supposed
is
to be
this
the
is
best.
Like Ocean's 11 level scams. To me, like it was just like you have all these moving parts, and then they have this. Somebody throws a wrench, so they've got to figure out how to fix the wrench and then go from there and then there's another wrench thrown in down the line and this person's turning on this person but is that person really turning on that person or is it all a setup from the beginning
You know, the only thing I could think of with, you know, with the 10 years passing, I have to think that this writer just, he had this script. It was kicking around. No one was really interested. And then the studios, for whatever reason, got desperate for a hit. And they didn't want to tarnish the good name of the Oscar winning The Sting. I mean, they did. It is the
they
name.
They did.
But, I mean, they changed the characters so they could technically, if it's a big flop, go like, yeah, but, you know, it's different. So it really doesn't change the first one because they're different people. Like, I think they put a safety net in. Place, you know?
Yeah, especially when you change the, I was with you the whole time when I was like, I thought these were the same characters, but then you look at their first names, you're like, oh, not even close. Like, it's completely different. But I gotta tell you, I didn't hate this movie.
Well, it's because you watched this movie after Dream a Little Dream. That's the problem.
I guess, like, that's true.
Oh my,
like,
God. Like,
but even like, if they would have called this something different.
Yeah,
it's all, to me, this is almost Halloween 3 level, where, like, if they would have not called that Halloween 3, I've said it before, everybody agrees, it's no...
Oh, everybody agrees.
Well, I mean, it would have been better received had it not been labeled as Halloween. If this had not been labeled as The Sting, I think this would not have been as hated. I actually really enjoyed, I thought...
It was fine.
A lot of it was really funny.
Yeah, it was fine. Like, it's by no means a great film.
That is
true. When you compare it to
coming off Dream a Little Dream.
Yeah, it's by no means great. And if you've seen the first movie, it does not even get close to comparison. Like, the tone of it is way more goofy and comedic, whereas the first one's a serious film, and it's just so good. I mean, Paul Newman, you know, Robert
I don't even know if it's a, it's not even serious as much as it is comedic. Like, that first one is funny.
Yeah, it's so it's,
yeah, but it's not yuck yuck like the second one.
No, it is not yuck yuck.
You know,
that's
it's
true.
I think there's a fascinating juxtaposition for, like, people that want to study the mechanics of film. And comparing these two movies, because that first one, it definitely has comedic beats in it, right? There are things in that movie that are laugh out loud funny, but it still manages to be serious. And it's not like they cast like bad people in this movie. I mean, Mac Davis is questionable, but
he's fine. He's serviceable.
He's serviceable.
No, he's not. He's no Robert Redford.
Sure,
but
like, Jackie Gleason's great. Terry Garr's great. Carl Malden, Oliver Reed, and then when you get into the character actors, Ron Rifkin. I mean, there's good, like, people in this movie, and it's written by the same guy. Like, you on paper, this isn't crazy. I mean, on paper, this is never going to be what the first one was, but on paper, it also shouldn't be as bad as it is. And and I think it also says a lot about how important casting is. Like, even when you get into these character actors, like, they're not bad, but they're for a different type of movie than the first one.
Here's the deal, though. Like, they cast Jackie Gleason to be Paul Newman. Like, those are not the same actor. And, like, okay, Mac Davis, whatever. You know, I don't think he was bad in the second one, but it's just like, he's not Robert Redford. And so it's just weird to have. I know that the characters' first names are different, but clearly it's a sequel. Like, they changed the first names, but it's some kind of spiritual sequel or whatever it is. And so they're supposed to be the same archetypes, the same type of characters, even if they're not the exact ones. And so when you change the tone of that, especially like with Jackie Gleason as opposed to Paul Newman, you're getting a completely different type of movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I was mad that I spent $5 to watch Dream a Little Dream. With this one, I was
Hoopla.
Like, all right. Yeah. Well, see,
no, wait
I couldn't
a minute,
get
hold
it to
on.
Work.
Hold on. You paid for this after I told you about Hoopla?
I tried to find it and I couldn't find it.
This was on. Yeah, you just you have a library card. You just sign in with your library card, and it's free.
No, yeah, I have a Hoopla account, but like, I searched it and it wouldn't pop up on my iPad.
Did you search it Sting number 2 or did you search it Sting II?
II.
You got to search it II.
I did the number 2.
Yeah, that's
it's
what,
II.
It's
yeah.
II.
Ah, well, that would be why I couldn't find it.
That's
which is,
a bum.
You know what? Honestly, though, I didn't mind paying for
no,
it. I didn't mind paying the $4 to rent it.
I'm with you, Joe. I would have watched this 100 times over Dream a Little Dream, coming off of Dream a Little Dream. Like, I've watched some movies in the background with Ryan playing games or whatever. Like, I haven't really sat down to watch a movie seriously since Dream a Little Dream, and don't know if I ever will again. I mean, this may have completely changed my outlook.
it broke Kevin.
That movie really almost did, seriously. But no, it was fine. It was whatever. Like, I did not think it was that bad. It's only when you compare it to the first one, I think, because the first one is considered such a masterpiece. And God, we could do, if you want to change this to the Paul Newman podcast, I will review any movie.
Paul Newman is one of the greatest seriously. Actors of all time.
He is.
He's Paul Newman.
His presence that he brings, his gravitas, Paul Newman is amazing. I would have no problem doing more of those movies. But anyway, when you're comparing this one to that, you're just like, oh, and it's goofier. It's like they're gripping the exact same jokes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're trying to do the same thing. Like, oh, stick this envelope under your arm as opposed to stick this envelope right. in your pants. Like, they're doing callbacks that are the exact same thing because they're just remaking the same movie with a little bit different premise.
Well, Tom has said before, like, there was that recyclable jokes.
Yeah.
Right? Because there was no home videos, so you're just like, well, I'll just recycle the same jokes. Sure. And this is the beginning of home video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't recycle those jokes.
But I will also say, like, I don't feel like you can get away with recycling the jokes from The Sting because it got shown on TV once a year, and it was a major event every time it did. Like, it aired on ABC. It was in their Sunday night movie, which was their premiere slot, and it was a major event whenever that movie aired. And so yeah, maybe people couldn't necessarily go rent it from the video store at the drop of a hat, but like, it showed every year. It showed during sweeps. It was that big of a deal. People, it was like, oh, The Sting is on tonight. You got to sit down and watch The Sting again. And so
TV was huge. You got to remember. I mean, Joe and I don't remember firsthand, but to Tom's point, like, yeah, there may have not have been home video, but when movies aired on TV and you had a limited amount of channels, like, that viewership was insane.
No, I definitely remember a time when, like, the ABC Sunday night movie or the, you know, Disney did their things on Sunday nights.
You always knew a movie was a really big deal if, like, they let it go past 10 o'clock. Like, if it would, like, when they would do, the Ten Commandments and it would run to, like, 10:30, and you're like, ooh, that's a big deal. They bumped the news so they could finish the movie. But the other thing, too, is The Sting really lent itself to being aired on television because there's not a lot in it that needed to get cut out, right? Like, sometimes you'd watch these movies on TV. Like, I remember trying to watch like Slapshot on television.
Oh God.
And like, that's just, it was a joke. Like, I mean, you can't watch that movie on free TV. Like, it was
no,
it was, you know, no. Where The Sting you could. Like, there's not a whole lot that needs to get trimmed from a movie like that, you know,
except for the N-word.
Well back then, well, you know.
Yeah.
But, and also first off, back then, like, you know, you didn't have to cut that off television. And even now, you don't to.
No.
Absolutely
not.
It's not
the
one of the banned.
N-word on television?
Yeah.
The culture hadn't switched yet.
Yeah. It was not.
Or you couldn't say that word.
It's not a banned word from television like the F word. Like, it's, you know.
Oh, wow.
And I think there was also this mindset, which I don't even necessarily disagree with, it was dependent on the context. So, like, when they would say the N-word in that movie, well, first off, the first time you hear it said is, not the first time, the second time, okay, but you hear it said by a bad guy, and it establishes that he's a bad guy, right? Like,
sure.
It's, you know, and so they weren't throwing it around like, ha, 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 we're calling these people that. Like, they were, like, a setting up that this mark that they were going to con was a dirt bag, so you didn't need to care about it, you know. And so,
is Robert Shaw ever a good guy?
I don't know.
I guess he's kind of a good guy in Jaws.
He's not awful, but yeah. But so it's like, you know, and I mean, think about, like, how many times they say it in Roots, you know, like, it was, you know, there are certain stories.
Well, I get the historical context.
There are certain stories you can't tell without using the word, you know. But yeah, like, a lot of it back then, in terms of if it was allowed to be used, was kind of, it was self-policed, and it was more along the lines of, well, we're establishing that this guy's bad, you know? And
they used the F word in this one.
Did they? I don't even remember.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
The other F word.
Coming off of Dream Little Dream, I was really sensitive to that too, where I'm just like, jeez.
And
remember
he uses it with, like, piss and P and V.
Remember,
like,
when, the Lonigan or whatever, he's like, I like women.
Oh no, it's not Lonigan. It's the other guy. It's the club owner.
Carl Malden.
Like, yeah. I knew a guy by the name of that name, and he was a bacock.
Missed that. Yeah.
Yeah, he uses, and it's like, it's not, he says it with, like, anger.
Yeah.
Like, there is an anger behind the use of that word. I was like, oh, good Lord, well, like, take it easy.
It's Jackie Gleason, and look at the era he's from.
That's true. I gotta tell you, he's my favorite part of the movie. He's great.
Oh, he's fine, yeah. I mean, Jackie Gleason's always fun to watch, and he was happy.
Oh, no, it wasn't Jackie Gleason, it was the other guy. It was the bar owner that said it.
Oh,
like,
okay.
The guy that owns the club.
Carl Malden. Yeah, it wasn't Jackie Gleason.
Okay.
No, he was talking to Jackie Gleason.
Gotcha.
That's true.
Okay.
But like,
Jackie
the guy
Gleason
that
was
owns...
pretending to be a card guy or whatever. Yeah.
Well, maybe we should just dig into the movie. Like, let's...
Okay, yeah. So, not Robert Redford and his partner are just grifters. Like, there's nothing of note about... There's nothing special about them, honestly. Like, they're just... working scams, and they are tight with the Jackie Gleason character, who is not Paul Newman. So he's getting out of jail because he got busted for something, and they decide to come up with this con. And we're pretty much introduced to these two goofs. They're working a con at a club where Hooper is like trying to trick
Hooker.
These two affluent women, one being Terry Garr, who I always forget is as beautiful as she is.
Oh yeah.
Like you look at her in Young Frankenstein, you look at her in this, you're like, holy guacamole. Like, how you doing? but it turns out that she was conning them. So that is your first introduction to the Terry Garr character, who is going to be a major player later.
And here's where you know the movie is already going off the rails, is they're doing this con, but you're not really seeing the con.
Yeah, that's
you know
fair.
when they're doing all this thing about like, oh, we're switching the envelopes and we're switching them back, and like you never really see it transpire. When Robert Redford does that and the first one, like you see it happen, and when you watch it, you see it, but you can't see it, but you know he actually did it, right?
Yeah. Right.
And this doesn't do that. It just is.
This does not.
It
do
just
that.
Basically says, "Oh yeah, we switched everything a bunch of times, and I stole your watch, but you stole my money clip, and blah, you know, and it's just like, but that's so lame. That's if you're gonna
with the dad from Alf.
Yeah, later on,
that's that floor manager is at the like not Macy's.
Yeah,
is the dad from
totally.
Alf.
That's funny.
But so it was just like, you know, if you're going to see a con movie, a movie about con artists, you want to watch the con play out. Part of the fun is either there being the big reveal and you realize that you got conned, or you know what the con is transpiring and you get to watch it happen while the other people can't figure it out.
But Tom, to their credit, though, I think, one, they know that you've seen the sting, and they're like, wink, wink, nod, nod, he's doing the Robert Redford thing. And two, like, clearly, you know, when the guy's like, hey, I heard these people have a lot of money, let me go over here, and he's doing the envelope thing. I mean, it's implied, like, you know what he's doing.
Yeah, but it's like the Cannonball Run and the Cannonball Run 2, right?
Sure.
And the Cannonball Run 2, like, they do so much time in their little silly sketches that they don't really do very many car stunts. And then at the end of the movie, in order to complete the race, they literally show you a map and little cartoon cars sliding around on it. And so it's like,
the Indiana Jones it.
Right. So like, yeah, the race was implied, but I went to see a Cannonball Run movie. I want to see cars crash. And sure. So when I go to see the sting, like, I don't want to see the con implied. I want to see the con, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that it's the Ocean's 11 effect, right? Like, not the original one. It's the new one.
Right.
Where you see everything happen.
Yeah.
And then when you think they're caught, you see an extra piece.
Right.
Like, that's the reveal. Like, you can follow that con the entire time.
Right.
And just when you think they're not going to make it, there's that one little piece that we didn't see that ties it all together. And you're like, oh, okay.
And that's what, when a movie like this works, what makes it so great. But it also was what makes them so difficult to write is that, like, they have to kind of leave out a piece of information for that to work. But if the piece they leave out feels false or cheap, now you just feel cheated. Like, this movie at the end tries to do that, and it just feels lame and arbitrary, right? But when the Sting does you know their final twist, you're like, oh man, you totally got me.
So you got
me. Like, you feel good about it, right? Like it's such a difficult thing to pull off of like making you feel good about the fact that you were too dumb to figure it out. Where in this one, when you're too dumb to figure it out, you just feel like, well, because you didn't tell me everything. Like, yeah, if you don't tell me everything.
Yeah.
Do you think you could make a heist movie in 2020?
Sure.
Like a scam movie? I don't think you can.
I think you could. I think
you can, but you got to set it somewhere else because there's too much technology.
Yeah, well, but you would the reason I disagree is because all scams revolve around new technology, and not all, but so many. Right?
Oh, okay.
Like think about in The Sting. Part of the reason they're able to pull off that big horse race thing at the end is because that they're sending the horse race
transcript
through telegraph, right? And yeah. there's an ever so brief delay, and they're able to capitalize on that delay, right?
Yeah.
And so
that's fair.
And so like I think if you want to come up with a scam, I think the only problem now is the scams that revolve around technology are just so nerdy, just people sitting in front of a computer typing that they're just not interesting to watch.
Yeah. Right.
Like that's a problem.
Okay. Yeah, so our characters Jackie Gleason's getting out of jail and they come up with this a new scam. Basically, it's going to be a boxing match. And they don't know how they're going to do it, but Jackie Gleason gets out of jail and he's like, I got an idea. And he gets his old crew back together. And basically what they're going to do is they're going to get Jake into the boxing ring. And he's going to throw this, they're going to change the bets around. They're going to get everything lined up. They're going to pick this one guy who is this nightclub owner who is that's the guy I was talking about. That guy's hilarious. Like, his facial expressions when Jackie Gleason kind of screws him over constantly. And like he's used to getting his way, but Jackie Gleason is always one step ahead of him.
Is that Mac Alinsky?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And he's like, I just thought he was very funny. I don't know why, but just like he's such a dirtbag that every time, like, he never wins. Just when you think he's ahead of the ball, he's never ahead of the ball. So like that, I enjoyed.
So
that
we should set up.
It.
So there's like two good guys and two bad guys as far as like main characters.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's like, you know, there's the Robert Redford, Paul Newman, archetypes, whatever you want to call them, right? So there's the Mac Davis is supposed to be.
They're
Robert
like
Redford.
Their second cousins.
Yeah. So Jackie Gleason is Paul Newman. Mac Davis is Robert Redford, and then you've got Lonigan, who is the guy that. And spiritually got screwed over, whatever, by the thing that they did in the first Sting, but it's not
who's doing a Robert Shaw impression,
right? And so Oliver Reed plays Lonigan, who's the same character somehow, and then you've got Gus Macalinsky is like the mobster type guy. He's their mark for Sting 2, and you know Lonigan starts kind of implying that these guys did this in before, and it gets messy at the end. But the new mark is this Macalinsky guy.
And that's the guy I was talking about, Tom, is I thought he was hilarious. Like, he's just such a dirtbag that every time he's getting screwed over constantly. He's never ahead. He thinks he's ahead,
right?
But he's never ahead.
And he's basically playing the same character as Shaw in the first one, because it's like, you know, he's their mark and they screw him over a little bit. And then the Robert Redford character is supposed to pretend like, you know, he's got the inside track on what's going on and he's turning on his boss to help him. Like, it is the same story again. I think that's what takes it down another notch, is they're just doing the same thing.
It's even the same story from the point of view. In the first one, you had like the cop that's trying to get Robert Redford the whole time, played by Charles Durning. And in this one, you have the cop that they accidentally scam him. In the train station, and he keeps popping back up to try and rouse them. You know,
yeah. This is Escape from L.A.
Yeah, I mean,
when I say that. Escape from L.A. is the exact same movie as Escape from New York, just with like a couple different twists.
And basketball. Kurt Russell.
And what I mean by
and basketball.
Oh, sign me up.
And basketball.
Yeah, and what?
And basketball.
Right. So Jake goes to Makalinsky and he kind of says, look, I know. So there's a whole scene where Terry Garr gets involved, where she becomes part of the Garr, you know, dresses to the nines, and she kind of tricks him into sitting with her. And then here comes Jackie Gleason, and Terry Garr and Jackie Gleason. It's hilarious. He's like, wait, what are you doing? He's like, ah, I just thought I'd sit here. And so
when he comes and sits down,
Jackie Gleason works him. And if you know anything about Jackie Gleason, this was my favorite shot of the movie, is Jackie Gleason is a legit pool shark. Like that dude, like the whole thing with Paul Newman in The Hustler is real.
They go play pool.
Like that was him. That was him playing pool for real.
I was going to say, because to have Jackie Gleason hustling pool, I thought that had to be a nod to The Hustler.
Absolutely. I mean, seeing Jackie Gleason play pool in 1983 was akin to seeing John Travolta dance again in 1994.
Yes.
Like it was like, you know, like that would be very exciting
without question
for a certain group of people. You know, because of The Hustler.
And I mean, The Hustler is a great movie. Like, I absolutely love it. Like, so seeing that for me, then I'm just like, wow, that's awesome. That was a nice little nod.
But it's also weird, though, to deliberately remind people of another Paul Newman movie, right?
Right. And another con artist Paul Newman movie. Like,
Yeah, so he works... Makalinsky the entire time. Card games, pool.
Well, then he's like, let me get my money back. Like, so, you know, you've got the conning him. And then he says, oh, no, give me a chance. But the thing is, this is the exact same thing as Shaw in the first one. Like, he's a con man, too. So he conned a con. And then he's like, let me win my money back. Here's a card trick. And I actually loved this card trick and how the woman reveals it. This was great.
This is my favorite scene in the movie. I agree. The pool scene, this whole thing, but especially, the three-card Monty thing. Like, so much
That's
of this...
genius.
So much of this, the cons in this movie feel like... Because David Ward, he researched con artists, read lots of nonfiction books about them for like 2 years before he wrote The Sting. Yeah. So he put a lot of work into it, and I really feel like a lot of the cons we see in this movie are basically cons that weren't cool enough to be in the first one.
It was just leftover stuff.
This three-card Monty scene was the only thing that I felt like that was good enough to have been in the first movie.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Because basically what they do is he's got it rigged where he's like, here, can you follow the queen or the red card or whatever? And then he does the three-card Monty thing. And instead of her choosing one card, she chooses what it isn't. And I just thought that was genius, because then the bad guy flips over the third card and it's revealed he cheated. They were all black cards.
Right.
So,
no, it was an ace. They were looking for the ace.
Yeah.
Well, but it like, was still a different color.
Yes.
Though.
Yeah. Yes.
But what's great, though, is that she doesn't flip over that third card.
Right.
And then it just hangs there, and Makalinsky can't say anything without admitting that he cheated, and then she walks out, and then Jackie Gleason basically flips it over to be like, F you.
I knew you screwed me over.
Yeah. It was great. I think that was a great scene, and I agree.
Highlight of the film.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's crazy how much money they get out of these people. Like, when you look back at, like, all of the money that they have taken from Makalinsky and Lonergan, there's a lot of money. And they are, I feel like they're getting, like, little bits and pieces from them. So, here they get $1,000 from him.
Yeah. And then $2,000, because he doubles it.
Oh, that's right. He doubles it. That's right. So they set it up where Jake sees Makalinsky, like, going on his favorite Coney Island ride. And he ends up having a chat with him. He's like, look, I work for this guy that just swindled you out of this cash, made you look like a dope. They want me to throw this fight, but I don't want to throw this fight. And if you bet on me, my odds are like 2-1. So there's a lot of money riding on against me. If I win this fight, you're going to take a lot of money from them. And I'm going to put all my life savings on it. We're going to be good.
You know what's so dumb about this real quick? Like, in any movie, there's been tons of movies where the premise revolves around a fighter throwing the fight. For anyone to be stupid enough to bet on someone to win, like, you can't, you could say you're the best ever, whatever. There's been a lot of fighters. Look at boxing. Look at UFC. There's been a lot of fighters where people think they know who's going to win and something happened that doesn't. Like, just the fact to put $500,000 or $400,000 or whatever on someone because they're like, oh, yeah, but I'm going to win. Like,
the only sure bet is if you know the guy is going to throw it.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't take
There was a second MMA company that they were going to build around Kimbo Slice. Like, that was the big deal. I think it was either ABC or CBS was sponsored. They had this massive event. Kimbo Slice was going to beat, you know, he was the main event. And he fought against, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy that wasn't supposed to win knocks out Kimbo Slice in the first round. And it killed the company.
Wow.
Like, the company went under not soon after that. Because the guy was like, they, you know, they built this guy. Kimbo Slice was a badass. Like, he was like a street fighter. If you look up online, he was he knocked a guy's eyeball out, like, on film. He hit him so hard.
So he's like the male Ronda Rousey.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, jeez.
They
Don't
did
get
build
him started.
That division, the division around her, and then she lost. But yeah, like, that, it ended that promotion because the wrong guy won. And it's just like, well, you never know. The fight game,
remember,
you never know.
And it's not fighting, but remember the Olympics? This would have been, I guess, what, the late 80s, early 90s? When was it Dan and Dan? It was like two guys.
Oh, my God, yes. They were the volleyball guys.
Yeah, and they had, like, it was just like a given that they were going to make the Olympics. And Nike had, I think it was Nike and McDonald's maybe, had built this huge campaign around them. And then they didn't make it.
Yep. They didn't get past the trials.
It was like, whoops.
Yeah, totally. So it just, that whole premise, first of all, just is, it's it kind of falls apart because I mean, yeah, you can say whatever, but, you know, I'll just throw this out here, unless the other guy was going to take a dive and is in on it too, there'd be no way to guarantee that.
No,
right,
correct.
So yeah, anyway,
so yeah, so they Mekulinski's like, okay, let me see what you can, like, I'm gonna be at this gym at this time training, like, let's see what you can do. So Mekulinski obviously shows up. It's all a big setup. Like, everybody in the gym is in on it. And
the fact that they drugged this guy to have him get his ass.
Oh, no, no. That's the, like, at the second fight.
Oh,
so
okay,
the first
sorry,
fight, I do, but... like, where they've got the guy that's training him. And he's like, Jackie Gleason's like, all right, you got to go in there. You got to get hit a lot. And he was like, man, fine, I guess, whatever. So Mekulinski shows up and we see Jake beat this guy up. And he's like, I got him. Like, this is. Mekulinski sees him fight. He's like, all right, man, you're good to go. Like, you're okay. He goes back and he's like, Jake and Mekulinski have a meeting where he says, I want to see you fight my guy. And of course, this is what I'm talking about, where there's always kind of a wrench thrown in and your quote unquote heroes have to do something to fix this. Right. And I thought this was a ridiculous scene, but I like this scene too.
The whole boxing gym and the setup of the interviewing the guy to get in the paper and boo whatever, like, I'm sure that's just another parallel for the office when they repaint the office and the Sting.
Yeah,
like,
right.
They're again, he's just taking his screenplay for the Sting and he's doing a find and replace.
Right.
Like, that's what every situation is.
You know, one of the things that really irked me about this scene was like them trying to make it feel bigger than it is. By, like, the con men would come in and, like, wear fake teeth or use a funny accent. And I'm like,
put on a fake mustache.
These people have never met you before. Like, right. You don't need to put on a fake voice. Like, why is Ron Rifkin comes in suddenly with this weird, like, oh, you gotta go outside, see? And I'm like, but you don't need to talk like that to trick them. Like,
right.
It's just because the guy in the first movie is like, my specialty is British accents.
Yeah.
I do
mean,
love that they
all
got,
they're doing.
I do that the guy that plays this photographer who goes into this gym is not Kramer.
I know.
Seinfeld.
I was thinking the same thing. He's been in lots of stuff and
I'm pretty sure.
Isn't the photographer guy, I could be mixing the two movies up, but isn't it the guy from Billy Madison?
It is.
The assistant?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And I always remember him as I'm pretty sure it's the guy from Quick Change that tries to get on the bus with a guitar and and the guitar is like sideways. And so he keeps not getting on the bus.
That's God. We need to review that movie. That's the movie.
That's such a great movie.
But yeah, he played Kramer on the Seinfeld TV show that took place on Seinfeld.
Oh, I didn't realize that, because I, like, the whole time I was like, if they were...
Oh,
like,
no. Yeah, there's an episode... When
no, I, now that you inside, say it, yeah, now that you say it, I remember, but the whole time I was like, God, this guy is so not Kramer. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Turns out, he was not Kramer.
Right. That's so funny.
So they do this whole setup where they have to clear out the gym. They've got the gym... the second gym for the second fight. They get it all set up where it's all their people. The corner man coats this other boxer who was Makalinsky's guy, coats his mouthpiece in like formaldehyde or something. And of course, he drugs him. Jake knocks him out, no problem.
That just like, it's one thing to con someone, especially a bad, like these guys they're conning in both movies are bad people. They're conning con men basically.
Right.
Like, okay, but they're drugging this guy so that Jake can wail on him and knock him out. Like there's something very wrong about that.
It's weird. Like I didn't find that as offensive as the parents in Dream a Little Dream poisoning,
their own daughter.
Yeah.
They are both very wrong. Yes,
totally wrong. Like, I'm not saying that. You're totally right.
But you're right.
I found it less offensive.
Part of what makes the sting work is that we never see them steal from good people, right? Obviously, con men steal from good people all the time. But like the kind of ethos of a film con man is that like they're taking advantage of your own greed or hubris or racism or it's some ugly aspect, some major character flaw that if that person didn't have that flaw wouldn't be ripped off. Like
is the same principle behind the Punisher, for example.
Right. Yeah, like
the Punisher is out there committing straight up crimes and murders,
right?
But they're only bad people,
right?
Well, except for that poor jaywalker that he saw across the street. Like, that was, no reason for that. Jake beats this guy up, and now McClinsky's like, "Yep, I got you. Like, I got your backing. You've got your protection." He's like, "You need to go see the Chancellor and say this one phrase and everything. Just put everything on him." So Makalinsky goes, and of course the Chancellor and the guy sitting at the table are both in on the scam. They make the bet, and then this entire time Lonergan has this other idea where he's gonna set everybody up and he's gonna make his money back. Like, I don't really understand.
Yeah, the whole time the movie cuts back and forth to him like in his palatial palace.
And
like,
he's got like this super offensive Mexican guy
who can't say
Shakespeare?
Yeah, it's really weird. They keep cutting back to him, and the whole time you don't like know what he's doing or why he's lurking in the background. But yeah, he just keeps being like, "Yeah, just you wait. We're gonna get them. We're gonna screw them over."
Right. So he enlists the cop that has been chasing Jake this entire time, and says like, "They'll be here at this time. Like, you've been looking for this guy. You can snatch them all up."
Which is the exact same plot point, except flipped, where the cop,
right,
where Robert Redford's like, "Yeah, you can come get this guy, but we need to pull the scam first." Like,
right.
It's the exact same thing in reverse with the cop.
It is. So the bets are made. Everybody's, doing their thing. And they get to the fight. And, of course, Jake is barely hanging on. Like, this guy is legit. He's beating the crap. This is also the weird turn where we find out that Terry Garr flips. Like, she's actually feeding Lonergan information, so...
Is that legit? I couldn't
remember. No, it's not legit.
It's
all
like
a setup.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Because
based
got,
on the ending, of
right,
course,
right.
It's a setup. Yes,
you,
of course.
If this thing had taken, like, one or two, quote-unquote, scams out, I think it would have been better. Like, there's just your... Everything about this movie is a scam, in that...
They tried to one-up.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just... That, to me, was a... was a drawback, is like there's just too many scams, just too much. So Terry Garr, this is where Terry Garr kind of reveals herself, that she's been giving Lonergan information, and she gets $40,000 out of Lonergan here.
Yeah.
So it's just like, well, there's another
this reveal. I hate this reveal so much.
I did not like this either.
Because first off, he tells this to the cop, who does not need to know it. It's only done for the benefit of the audience. It's such lazy screenwriting. And then when you see her, then it goes from lazy screenwriting to lazy directing, because she walks into the room with this big giant hat with the brim down, right, and then looks up dramatically. I'm like, like it's this big reveal, like, oh no, she's in on it. But that's only a reveal for the audience. So for her to walk in like that
and do that
and do that to that guy, he'd be like, yeah, here's a blonde chick, whatever.
So, but
like,
it's not even a reveal because she's the only woman we've seen in this movie.
Right.
We haven't seen her. There's no other women. There's the other woman that she's sitting at the table with. But Terry Garr is the only woman in this movie.
Yeah.
I wish they would just be meta like Deadpool and be like, what are you doing? Like, why are you landing like that? You know, like some kind of commentary on that. Like, what was that reveal? Like, hi, can I help you?
Right. So they're all the fight and everything's going according to plan. And then Lonigan kind of gets there as well. And he bets $1 million on the other guy. Right? Like, isn't
Lonigan bets on Mac Davis because he's gonna win, because then he has to go switch the bet.
No. It's Lonigan makes a bet on the Chico. The other guy, Mac Alinsky, bets on Jake because he thinks he's gonna win. Right? Because that's the whole deal.
Yeah, Lonigan wants to win double his money and screw them over. So,
right.
Yeah,
Mac Alinsky bets on Jake because that's his guy. And Jake says, he's like, I'm going to knock him out. So when Lonigan does the reveal, he's like, yeah, that's a good fighter. I got to tell you, though, he's full of crap. That's where Mac Alinsky's like, oh, go back to the bookie and change the bet.
And which at first I'm like, wait a minute, you can't change bets. And then I see how they change the bets, and I'm like, oh, well, I guess he just did.
But at that point, like, you're not changing the bet. You're just robbing the guy. Like, why?
Well, that's
like,
what I'm saying.
Why even go through the illusion that you're changing the bet? Just shove a gun in his face and say, give me all your money. It's the same thing.
That's where it fell apart for me, too. Yeah. Same thing, where he's like, yeah, change the bet. And then they're like, nope, tear up that paper. Okay, see you later. Like, let's hope this, like, yeah, you just did something completely, I don't know if I could say illegal, because it's illegal betting.
No, he bet. If you watch, so he tears up the ticket that's the marker for Mac Alinsky betting on Jake.
Right.
And the chancellor writes a new ticket that changes the mark from Jake to Chico.
Right. But why didn't he just rob the money?
Yeah,
because he wants double the money.
But our
he's
point
greedy.
Is,
no, he's but, trying to get more money.
But our point is that if you're going to go put a gun in somebody's face when you're halfway through a match and you're losing,
changing the bet, which is the same thing.
Just take the whole thing.
Just put a gun in their face and rob them. Like, there's no reason to go through the illusion that you're betting at that point, you know?
Yeah, if you change your bet in the middle of a match so you know the outcome, you are stealing the money.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I'm with you. Okay.
Yeah, so it was just dumb. Like, that fell apart for me, too, where I'm just like, wait, what? Wait a minute. Go to their safe or look at the money on the table, just take it.
Yeah, right.
You know,
well, and then so, yeah. and, so they, and then presumably the... hang on then presumably the only reason that they even let them do it is because they're this bookie agency is being ran by Gondorf or Jackie Gleason.
Correct.
So they already know that the outcome's gonna flip anyway, and so they let them. But like, but then, like, there's this shot when he leaves. There's one of the guys, like, hanging his head in his hands, like, oh, no, we're
screwed.
Oh,
no. They didn't know. Because Jackie Gleason has to go, oh, never mind. You're right.
You think they knew or just Jackie Gleason?
I think Jackie Gleason knew.
I do, too. I think only he knew when everyone else was.
Yeah.
Now we're writing their screenplay. But
yeah, someone needs to.
But, you know, but I think that was the big reveal that we're about to get to is all dependent on, like, no loose ends. Nobody else knows. So they're all playing the part.
Right. So, yeah, the fight goes down. We see that Lonigan flips the bet. Everything we think, right, as the viewer, has gone to crap. Terry Garr is no longer sitting at ringside. So we're left to assume that she is actually flipping on them. Jackie Gleason gets up, tells Jake, he's like, look, man, I don't know what to tell you. You got to knock this guy out. And he's so nonchalant about it. Jackie Gleason is, where Jake is not a fighter. Like, he's like, I fought in the Golden Gloves 20 years ago. So he's like, you're going to do just fine, kid. Well, you'll be all right.
Thank goodness that at least there is a flip that gets revealed later, because just seeing an empty seat and a guy going, yeah, you have to win now,
right,
does not make someone capable of winning. So no. I appreciated that there was a reasoning behind it, because when this happened, I'm like, no, this guy just got his ass beat for six rounds or whatever. He shouldn't have lasted one round.
I do like
him
the
just
line
being
the,
like, I'm mad now.
Right. I do like the line at the end of the movie when the reveal happens. Like, I got to tell you, didn't think you'd make it five. Like, yeah, I just, no, that, I, that was a good little
I,
line.
I liked that flip. I don't know. I actually liked that because I did not see that one coming.
So Jake, you think that Jake's pulling a Rocky and he's coming back and he's going to beat this. He beats this. He knocks this guy out. And of course, now Lonigan's pissed. Mackalinsky's pissed because he just lost all this money.
He changed to the wrong bet. I mean, the idea of conning someone to where before you know that it's a double cross, like to get someone to change their bet to the wrong thing, like right. I really like that concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Just when you think you're ahead, you're not ahead.
Yeah.
So the fight's over and everything kind of clears out. The cop was given the wrong information, obviously, and nobody's there at the bust except for the little bellboy with the flowers.
Oh, the telegram, which
was fine. And then they're walking, you know, Jackie Gleason and Mac Davis are walking down next to this train. Excuse me. And he's just like, where's my cut? And he was like, I don't know, man. Like, I gave it to the girl and we don't know where she is. But, you know, I do like that Jackie Gleason's like, best of luck, and just gets on the train and leaves. And like, if you don't know how this is going to end, you're like, well, why would he ever partner with him again? Like, he just screwed him out of all this money.
You don't need the money, I'll hold it for
two reveals that we get is that Chico, the other fighter, was in on it the whole time. He was going to take a dive the entire time. And then the second reveal, Terry Garr gets off the train, her and Jake actually hooked up, like they're kind of a couple at this point. And we get the reveal that she's like, Jackie Gleason told me to hold on to the money for you. And he was like, why would he do that? And she's like, I don't know, my dad does weird things. And that's the reveal, is that Terry Garr and Jackie Gleason are father and daughter. And then everybody's happy. That's how the movie ends. It's like everything's okay, I guess.
He's my dad.
Dun, dun, dun. Right.
Just like,
and of course, Jackie Gleason just gives like a tip of the hat and just goes off into this on a train.
I also think it's weird as this train, because this train continues to drive off as the credits roll for like a good 2 or 3 minutes, and he just stands on the back of the train, and I'm like, what are you looking at? Like, there's
bye,
like,
goodbye,
go back
now,
in the
goodbye.
Train. Like, what?
I was like, is this the first post credit scene ever? I was wondering like what they were getting into.
So no, the first post credit scene ever. There might have been like some smaller. I think there was like one smaller art house movie that did something like that. But
is that Ferris Bueller?
No,
no.
Gotta go back a little further.
Okay.
I think we talked about it, didn't we?
I can't think of it.
It's the Muppet movie.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Because remember, I always forget the name of the big giant monster.
It's like Alice or something.
That's not Sweetums, right?
Oh, it is Sweetums.
So Sweetums.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because Sweetums like is trying to follow them to Hollywood.
And then he bursts
through the screen. And then the Swedish chef is like, the flume is okie dokie.
The whole movie, Sweetums is running behind him, trying to catch up to him. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that's I believe the first like major motion picture with a post credit scene.
That's funny.
That's funny. Yeah. Well,
but this movie's not awful. Like it's not good, but it's if it wasn't called The Sting 2, I think it would have been better reviewed. Not much, but like I think I think people would have just been like, this is a pretty mediocre movie, but because they attach that pedigree of The Sting to it and then like deliberately imitated its film style, right? Like with the music and the title cards and the
oh my gosh, yeah, are these Scott Joplin songs too, or like not Joplin songs?
Like I don't know. The only Scott Joplin song I know is The Entertainer. So like
the first movie is The Entertainer, right? The whole first movie. And so they were doing ragtime songs in the second one, but I couldn't identify whether or not they were really his songs or if they were like, oh, we got Bob Joplin songs in this one.
I think that they're in the public domain at that point because they're pretty old. It's ragtime. So my guess is that they were probably Scott Joplin songs. And the movie was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Musical Score. But he was definitely, it was imitation Hamlish, right? Like it was, you know, he was clearly trying to sound like Marvin Hamlish did. And we watched my wife and the kids were in and out of the room and they were like, oh my God, this movie's so bad. And I was like, but the first one's great. and they're just like, uh-huh. And so I made them watch like that opening opening sequence of The Sting, and they were just like, oh my God, like how, like this is doing the exact same stuff, but just everything about it works, where nothing about this was really working. You know, like it was
nothing at all.
Yeah. And they were, and even my wife was like, I can't even really put my finger on why this works and that doesn't, but like, this is great. Like I'm totally on board.
On board.
Like, even the music sounds better and it's essentially the same song, you know, it's very,
oh sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't, I mean, something about it to me, I feel like, again, I did not hate The Sting 2. Like, I had an entertaining time with it, like Joe did. But knowing The Sting and seeing how it's an exact, it's a carbon copy.
Right.
Of it, but everything carbon copied is blurry. And I mean, you know, I mean, carbon copies by definition aren't as good. But I mean, I'm talking about like, it's like a carbon copy that then got smudged and then crumpled up, you know, like. Knowing that it's an exact copy and they're not doing really anything original, I think that just in the back of your mind, you're like, even if this had a different name, like Joe said, like it would be entertaining, but you know, they're being so lazy with it. You know, it just,
I think that was the problem, you know, like it is, I didn't realize how much of a retread it was until we started talking about it.
Right.
And I was like, it's exactly that.
It's like Airplane 2. Like, again, it was a different time period, but knowing now, like going back and watching Airplane 2, you're just like, yeah, this isn't funny. This isn't good.
It's the same movie. You just changed it to a space shuttle to be topical. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were supposed to, the goal was to make another one of these, right? Like they were going to make a prequel and show how Gondorf and Frodo,
how Paul Newman became
con men and came up through the ranks, and then this tanked so hard they bailed. This actually gets referenced on an episode of The Simpsons. Did you know that?
No.
What do they do?
In The Great Money Caper, which was from 2000.
Okay.
Abe Simpson has an idea for a scam, and he says, this will work because it was featured in The Sting 2, so nobody knows about it.
That is a great joke. Oh, my God.
Although it's also like that's a ripoff, right? Like, because that's basically the premise of Office Space.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could see that.
Oh, sure. Because,
I mean, that's the big joke in Office Space, right? Because they were like, we're going to do this thing that
it worked
was
in
Superman
3.
Because I remember, like, watching Office Space, I saw it in the theater. Like, I was like, I was one of the people that did that.
You're one of the three people.
Yeah, I was in a press screening. And I know a guy that, Rizzuto from The Point, does morning shows on Morning on The Point. He was telling me about how he was working in New York at the time, and they wanted him to go work the screening for Office Space, and that, and he didn't know what it was, and he was just like, okay, because he was part-time. He was doing, like, overnights, I think, and so the movie wasn't big enough to get one of the real DJs from that station, because I think he was at the station Stern was on.
And, sure.
And so he's like, okay, sure. And so he's like, he goes, now I look back, and it's great, because it's, he goes, it was literally, because it's New York, we had the cast there, and so he's like, it was me and Ron Livingston, and he's like, and I had no idea why until later, but we were taking baseball bats to fax machines while they took photos of it. So he's like, he got to beat up a fax machine with a baseball bat with Ron Livingston. And I'm like, that's pretty awesome.
Funny.
Yeah. But but yeah, I remember seeing the movie when it came out, and when they were setting up, when they're talking about what they're doing, and I'm like, oh my God, this movie totally stole that from Superman 3, and like everybody's gonna pretend like that's not a thing. So when they referenced it, I was like, okay, cool, I can like this movie.
All right. You win, movie.
Yeah, that's a really good joke. But you're right, Tom. Office Space, I believe, was 99. So if it was a 2000 Simpsons episode, they almost had to have seen that and made the joke.
Yeah.
Right afterwards.
Totally.
You know?
The only credit you can give them is that maybe because of the lag time on animation, maybe they were.
Oh, it is a year. You're right.
Yeah.
It's a year lag.
So, like, maybe they made the same joke,
but that's coincidence for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
I know we don't do video recoveries much without Dan, but like, if you want to see a good con artist movie about boxing that most people I think are unaware of, there's a movie called Digstown.
Okay.
I've never seen it.
No, me either.
Okay, it stars James Woods, but see it anyway. But it's like it's like James. It was before he was super crazy. But it's like James Woods and Bruce Dern and Lou Gossett Jr. and Heather, a very very young Heather Graham, and it takes place in this kind of like factory town, like those towns where like one guy owns the whole town. And
sure,
Lou Gossett Jr. plays this aging boxer, and they bet him that he can't knock out 10 people in 24 hours. And so they have this 24-hour boxing match. And this movie is so much fun. It's not like a great movie, but it's a fun movie. And cannot recommend it highly enough. I think if you've never seen the movie, if you see Digstown, like, you will walk away having a very fun cinematic experience.
It's cool. I'm going to check that out.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, totally. Let me know what you think. I think that you guys would both like it. Like I said, it's not a great movie, but it's a fun movie. But it's directed by Michael Ritchie, one of his last ones. And so, like, he's the guy who did Bad News Bears. And he's done a lot of cool little movies over the years. So
I'll throw out, like we said earlier, The Hustler, even The Color of Money, which, like, I don't like
The Color of Money. I like it a lot.
I don't like it as much as The Hustler, but, like, it's still worth seeing. And then I would say Paper Moon and Matchstick Men.
Well, even The Sting. What are we talking about? Ocean's 11.
Well, like, I think that's kind of implied.
Yeah, well, yeah, The Sting is, I think we just did an hour video recovery.
That's
on
true.
The Sting,
yeah, right.
But yeah, I love Paper Moon. And then I also love how Matchstick Men is like a spiritual remake of Paper Moon.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, Matchstick Men's great.
Yeah, but so. Yeah, Paper Moon is like, oh, such a great movie. But yeah, so those are all good ones. So, well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the virtual table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, check out our Patreon at Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Since there'll be no new movies next week, I guess we will tackle another cash grab sequel. I'm going to call an audible and just pick the movie right now.
Okay.
All right.
And this one's for you, Joe. I say next week we do Escape from L.A.
Yes! Yes!
Oh, I mean, I would love to do that. But,
game,
you know, Troll...
Game on!
I mean, Trolls comes out next weekend, and that's the very first new release. Like,
we'll do
so,
two.
I mean,
we'll do,
want...
Well, maybe we do two then. Because
you've already brought up Escape from L.A. You can't take that back.
I mean, I first of all, I love Escape from L.A. Bruce Campbell's in it. Like, oh, that movie, I love it. So I'm good with that. But I feel like we have to do the very first movie ever to skip theaters that was supposed
agree.
To.
I would agree.
You know,
okay, well, then let's do that instead of a box office report. Because the box office report.
Because there ain't going to be no
nothing,
box office report.
So much, okay. There's so little news to talk about. So that's what you have to look forward to until then. You just heard us hammer it out. So thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Hammerhead Hagen lives in Digstown. Quick addendum, I did not ruin this movie for you. Still go see it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.